I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. In the midst of yet another outbreak and lockdown in Victoria, the government has faced more criticism over the vaccine rollout.
The US announced this week that they have got 50% of their population completely done. Australia's performance is underwhelming on any measure.
Well, with great respect, today was a record day of 111,000 Australians.
With a lot of focus on the pace of the rollout and their messaging.
We are now moving into the phase where we've gone from a careful start, as you would expect us to do, to protect the health.
With concerns that this has fuelled vaccine hesitancy.
Our medical advice remains that we want to encourage as many people as possible to be vaccinated as early as possible.
But it's not a race, it's not a competition, it's about the health and safety of Australians.
Today, the Morrison government's muddled messaging on the vaccine. It's Monday, the 31st of May. Mel, we keep on talking to you from, you know, your home or your bedroom when you're in the middle of an outbreak. This seems like a repeated theme.
We've got to stop meeting like this, Laura.
Exactly. How's it going?
Oh, it's okay. I think it's just a lot of Victorians are kind of getting used to this.
Melissa Davey is medical editor of Guardian Australia.
And we have been warned for the last few months that we should expect more outbreaks, we should expect more lockdowns all throughout Australia. There's probably going to be more hotel quarantine leaks, so I guess it's also not completely unexpected.
I have been hearing and seeing a bit of frustration on the ground as well, right?
I think there's frustration about the slow pace of the vaccine rollout, and it's on a number of fronts. So First of all, early on in the vaccine rollout, there was a lot of frustration about a lack of supply. So even if you wanted to get vaccinated, it wasn't easy to get an appointment. And now it looks like that supply is not so much of an issue anymore. There's plenty of vaccines available. So we're still only sitting on about 3.7 million people in Australia who've received a vaccination, and around 500,000 people who have received their second dose as well. Now, those figures are from late last week, so they will have changed over the weekend, but they're still lower than many would expect. In other numbers, we've heard that as of mid-May, we had 1.5 million doses sitting unused in COVID clinics across the country. And that can be a problem because once they've been thawed out, the vaccines have a shelf life in the case of Pfizer for about 5 days. And for AstraZeneca, that can be stored for up to 6 months.
So these vaccines can expire, and we know some were just sitting around at one point. Do we know how many, if any, have just been thrown out?
I think it's fair to say that we haven't wasted a lot of vaccine. We have been pretty good at getting it out there. I have asked the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, many times about the vaccine wastage for an exact number, and they just keep saying that it's in line with their expectations. So it's something they calculate for, not just here, but around the world. Most governments expect there'll be a little bit of waste. We did early on in the UK and US rollout see a much higher percentage because the situation was so dire there that they were just trying to get vaccines out everywhere and anywhere. They weren't really tracking it. So there was a lot more wastage, but Australia is being quite careful about that. This means, though, that we do want to make sure we use all of our vaccine efficiently. And when the deliveries go to the mass vaccination centres especially, you want people showing up and standing in line so it's not just sitting there.
Mm. Has that happened?
Yeah, I mean, some are doing a huge number of vaccines, and we're seeing that at the sites like the Olympic Park site in New South Wales. There are huge lines, and yet it seems to be quite efficient. People are in and out pretty quickly. But there have been other sites, and I've spoken to people at sites here in Victoria where it's been really slow. There are no lines. There's sometimes no people there. They're sitting pretty much empty for a great portion of the day. And I also spoke to a nurse working at one of the mass vaccination sites, and she said that a whole shift went by for her, an 8-hour shift, and she only vaccinated one person.
Wow.
Yes, and she said that she was fuming about it because she sees how important vaccination is, and she couldn't believe that there weren't people coming, getting vaccinated as soon as it was available. Of course, this was before the latest outbreak in Melbourne, which has led to a significant increase in people showing up to vaccination centres. But it's not a great look prior to this outbreak for people to have been so slow to get vaccinated.
Do we know why that is, that some vaccination hubs were empty and things have been going so slowly?
Look, one of the reasons may be down to hesitancy specifically within the age group that's been vaccinated so far. We're currently in phase 2A of the rollout, meaning people aged 50 and older are eligible to get vaccinated. And before them, it was people older than that. So 50 plus have been vaccinated so far. And, you know, that policy is slightly different depending on what state you're in. As the vaccine rollout continues, different states are kind of progressing at different paces. New South Wales is now allowing people aged between 40 and 49 to register their interest in being vaccinated, and they're slowly being contacted to say, look, we've got extra vaccine here, come and get vaccinated. So that's already happening for people in their 40s in New South Wales. And South Australia has opened their scheme up to anyone over 16. And Victoria announced last week that they're opening up vaccination now to those who are aged 40 and above. And then on Friday, they flagged that they may even extend the criteria even further in coming weeks. But overall, there are reports that there is some concern from some people about the AstraZeneca vaccine in particular. And that's the vaccine that has been made available at these mass vaccination hubs. So we reported on an essential poll from last month, which found 46% of those over the age of 50 said that they were willing to take either the AstraZeneca or the Pfizer vaccine, but 39% said they were unwilling to take the AstraZeneca jab.
I can guess where this concern has come from. We spoke to you on the podcast about the AstraZeneca vaccine and the risk of blood clots that does come with it. Do we have any more information on that since we spoke to you last?
Yeah, so this is a very specific type of blood clot, very rare and severe vaccine-linked blood clot. And there is a very low chance of this side effect. It may occur in around 4 to 6 people per million. And the medical advice, of course, in Australia changed to say that AstraZeneca should be given to those aged 50 and over, and that those under 50 should get the Pfizer vaccine as the preferred vaccine. So it's not that they can't get the AstraZeneca vaccine. There are reports that people who feel comfortable with it can still get it. But the advice is it's preferred that they get the Pfizer vaccine because of this extremely low risk of severe clots, which may be higher in people who are aged under 50. The risk may be a little bit higher.
So basically, people over 50 have the lowest risk of blood clots with the AstraZeneca vaccine, but it seems like they still have quite high concern about it.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. I've spoken to doctors in the Royal College of GPs. I've spoken to the Australian Medical Association about this, and they are a bit hesitant about AstraZeneca, and also not just because of the clot risk. I think this particular vaccine has kind of been a bit plagued from the start. There were all those reports about it being less effective than Pfizer, for example. But what we know now is that all of the vaccines are pretty similar at preventing severe disease and death. They're all pretty much around 97% effective. And of course, that changes a bit with different variants, but generally they're all about the same. So there is this idea that Pfizer is the better vaccine and that they should just wait for that vaccine, that it's not fair that they have to get AstraZeneca. And it doesn't help that the government's own messaging has been a bit muddled on this. So, for example, the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, said recently,
We want to encourage everybody over 50 to be vaccinated as early as possible. But we've been very clear that as supply increases later on in the year, there will be enough vaccine of mRNA vaccines for every Australian.
And so that kind of put the message out there that, well, don't rush out to get vaccinated now if you don't want the AstraZeneca vaccine. Just kind of wait. Wait till you can get Pfizer or Moderna. The chief health officer in Victoria has also really tried to reassure people about the AstraZeneca vaccine.
We know there are still millions of over 50s who are yet to get their vaccine. I know many of them will have started booking now.
Completely acknowledging the risk of the severe rare blood clots.
The concerns about clots, I understand. This is the same vaccine, AstraZeneca vaccine, that's been given to over 20 million people in the UK. The UK that is now down from 60 plus thousand cases per day to 2.5. It is getting over its pandemic through this very vaccine.
And all medications have risks.
As vaccines go and as the risk of clots go with the AstraZeneca vaccine, that is a much, much smaller risk than for so many other things in life.
And he also warned that nowhere near enough people in Victoria have been vaccinated yet for there to be any kind of safety from an outbreak. And the New South Wales Premier said the same about her state, you know, just not enough people yet have been vaccinated to really reduce a risk of an outbreak significantly.
Is there any other reason for this slow take up of the vaccine?
One of the reasons as well that we're seeing lower rates of people 50 plus going to a mass vaccination hub is because they might have more health conditions, they might have comorbidities, and they have a better relationship with their GP, and they would feel much more comfortable going to their GP for a vaccine than going to a mass hub where you don't know the staff member. But GPs are having a much harder time, especially a couple of months ago, getting access to vaccine. So there are also people saying, why not give some of the vaccine from the mass vaccination hubs to GPs? I think it's just about now making sure it's distributed more fairly. So maybe making sure that GPs are getting some of the spare vaccine so that they can vaccinate their patients. And that's starting to happen. The Australian Medical Association told me that they're starting to see some of the excess supply go to GPs. So that's starting to resolve a little bit. But there is frustration and definitely a lot of people saying things to me like, well, if people over 50 don't want the vaccine, give it to me. I'll be grateful for whatever vaccine I can get. There's also people who are 50 and over who kind of feel like they don't want to be told that they can only get the AstraZeneca vaccine. They feel like they should have a choice. The Labor front bencher Bill Shorten has had a go at the government over this, saying, look, if people want the vaccine, just let them get it.
Well, I don't know why we haven't done it, but why can't we just get anyone who wants to get vaccinated, even if they're under 50, to be able to go and get a vaccination? The quicker we can get this done, at least these closures mightn't be quite as catastrophic if they loom.
And we actually do know that generally younger people are more likely to use those hubs because they're more mobile, they've got less health conditions, they're less worried about seeing their regular doctor. They might, you know, be in the city and just pop into a vaccination hub while they're there or get vaccinated on their lunch break at work. So I think that as more young people do become eligible officially, we will see those mass vaccination hubs start to fill up very quickly. And as the outbreaks occur and people start to feel like it's more real again, we'll see them fill up quickly, and we're seeing that already. But people weren't worried when there wasn't the risk of an outbreak. And now that there is this risk again in Victoria and more lockdowns, lots of people do really want to get this vaccination.
So what exactly is happening on the ground there in Victoria since the outbreak when it comes to vaccinations?
Well, last week, the vaccine booking line for 40 to 49-year-olds in Victoria had already crashed. The vaccine booking website also crashed. The hotlines for information and booking information have been tied up. So it has been a significant logistical increase for the phone networks and the websites. New South Wales has also seen a spike as a result. We're obviously very close to New South Wales here in Victoria. It's a lot of travel between the two states and crossover of cases. So it is spurring vaccination to occur in other states as well. And I have to say, it's really heartening going into this lockdown that there is such a high demand for vaccination now and that we're seeing lines around the block. But relying on an outbreak to get your population vaccinated is probably not the best approach.
Next, should the government introduce lotteries and lollipops for jabs?
What else can the government be doing to really ramp up this rollout as more and more people become eligible in the next few months?
It's really interesting to look at what other countries have been doing with their rollouts, especially those with really high vaccination rates, like the UK and the US. So overseas, they've made the vaccine super accessible to where people go. So they've trained different people to administer it. People who don't necessarily have health and medical backgrounds are being trained to administer vaccines, and they're being administered at supermarkets, at workplaces.
Wow.
And it's just making it really easy to go out and get vaccinated. You know, maybe in Australia you could get vaccinated at a Bunnings or something like that. I just don't think that would happen here, though. I think we're pretty careful about who we train and you know, for fair reasons. But there is talk that it could be made more accessible, and we are starting to see it being rolled out in pharmacies now as well, which will help with that. There's also a lot of criticism about the public health campaign being rolled out by the federal government promoting vaccination, that it's just not been very effective and hasn't been very wide-reaching.
Yeah, I mean, what is Australia's public health campaign on this? I feel like I haven't really seen too much about over the last couple of months since we first really started giving out the vaccine.
I mean, that's exactly the problem. I tried to find a government vaccine ad a few days ago, and I had to Google, you know, federal government Australia vaccine ad. And it took me to a federal government webpage. I mean, who visits a random federal government webpage?
Oh, me, every day, of course.
And it was an ad targeting over 50s.
COVID-19 vaccines continue to roll out to those most at risk. People aged 50 and over can now have the vaccine.
But I can't tell you what it said. I can't remember. It was so boring. It was kind of, it had this voiceover that kind of similar to voiceovers when you're riding on public transport and they announce the next stop, that kind of just really dull voice.
Our Therapeutic Goods Administration continues to closely monitor the safety of all vaccines in Australia.
They're like air safety messages, you know. They're quite dull and you can kind of tune them out. Whereas the UK, they got celebrities on board.
My name is Elton John.
They had Elton John, Michael Caine.
I've just had a vaccine for COVID. It didn't hurt.
The US had Barack Obama, Bill Clinton.
I want to go back to work and I want to be able to move around.
To visit with Michelle's mom, to hug her and see her on her birthday.
Wow. The heavy hitters.
Yeah, they're using the celebrity factor.
I feel like John Farnham's the only one I can think of to let for Australia to roll out in terms of broad dad appeal.
Yeah, John Farnham and Dr. Chris Brown. I think that's it. But yeah, so they've obviously thought about it in other countries very carefully. I mean, Singapore had this really wild disco-inspired song. Where they brought back a couple of stars from a 90s sitcom who were quite popular and got them to sing this song.
Mm. COVID numbers now so low. Why take now? Just take it slow.
No cases, isn't no cases. Don't sabo and throw our faces.
New Zealand had a humorous campaign that also kind of framed it as this is how we return to freedom.
We got plans too, because we're overfighting and we're ready to win. Watch out.
Because you know what this is? It's the metaphorical door to freedom.
And so some experts have said we need to do something similar, that, okay, you know, when you're first dealing with a mass vaccination rollout, it's okay to just have a few boring government ads. You just got to push the things out. But they've had enough time now to think about something more inspired and more targeted. And other experts have said, look, we need to start offering incentives to people to get vaccinated at this point.
Mm, like a lollipop for every jab.
Exactly. A sticker, a lollipop, well done. But you know, so maybe something a little bit more appealing. So one of the suggestions made to me by a few epidemiologists actually was using lottery tickets, you know, an entry into the lottery for every 10th person who gets vaccinated. And they did this really successfully in Ohio.
The first Ohio Vax-a-Million drawing is tonight. In an effort to get more people vaccinated, its sweepstakes seems to be encouraging more Ohioans to get the vaccine.
The governor there has created a lottery, and for everyone who has been vaccinated, they can enter, and five people will get $1 million each. And, you know, this drastically increased their vaccine uptake.
Vaccine demand was down mid-April to May. Between the announcement and now, shots have increased by 53%, with more than 113,000 Ohioans getting
their first dose. Working very well here as well, for sure.
Australians love a punt, love a gamble, love
the
lotto.
Sure. Yeah.
So it probably would have a good effect here.
Mm.
And, you know, as one professor of epidemiology told me, it's when we have hesitancy and confusion in the population, that's when you need to be doing more to educate people. Because, I mean, if you think about the messaging we've had throughout this vaccine campaign, it has been really confusing. We've had a lot of reports early on that were true, that there just wasn't vaccine available, right? That everyone was struggling to get it in their clinics. And so there would have been an attitude from some people like, well, you know, what's the point in trying to book an appointment? The vaccine's not there. The booking website is overwhelmed and overloaded. So people might have thought, look, I'll just give it a couple of months to settle down. then you have that very late night dramatic government announcement about the change in advice for the AstraZeneca vaccine. And, you know, while the government has blamed the media for reporting of the AstraZeneca clotting, I think the government has to take some responsibility for not putting out good information and for putting it out in a way that probably didn't help with confidence in the vaccine as well.
So I suppose with the combination of an outbreak and maybe some incentives and just some clearer information about the actual risks of AstraZeneca and the benefits of AstraZeneca, those three things combined might kind of kick our vaccination efforts up a notch.
I think so. And I think also promoting more that it's a real selfless public good you can do. You're not necessarily getting vaccinated for yourself. You're doing it so that we can go back to a normal way of life and to protect the other people around you. I think that should be a key reason, and to kind of play on that public good would be a really useful way forward as well.
I do have to admit, after our last episode on AstraZeneca, I did come away thinking about that a whole lot more. And I haven't yet been in the position where, you know, I would have to go and get the AstraZeneca vaccine. I'm wondering whether you've thought about that personally. It's very different talking about this research and then making the decision yourself.
Definitely. Oh, if I could get the AstraZeneca vaccine tomorrow, I would. I'm not eligible yet. But I feel like it's this amazing feat of science. And I feel so lucky to live in Australia every day. And I look at what's happening in India, and the only reason that I wouldn't have the AstraZeneca vaccine is if I could somehow give it to someone in a country that's in a dire situation. But, you know, we do have lots of vaccine available here, and the moment we're eligible, I'll be getting vaccinated. But people around me are getting vaccinated, friends with comorbidities, and my mum and dad have actually been vaccinated. They both got their first AstraZeneca vaccine. My mum is in her 50s. She's a principal at a major public school. And my dad is in his 60s, and he's actually had a whole raft of health conditions just in the past couple of years. He got a very severe golden staph infection, which is a nasty blood infection, got to his heart. It destroyed his heart. He needed major heart surgery. He nearly died. He had two strokes as a result of that surgery. He got diagnosed with prostate cancer. He beat that cancer. He's had major surgeries for skin cancers, all in the last couple of years. And he got the AstraZeneca vaccine, and he feels so grateful to have got it. It just, his experience, I think, is quite reassuring that you can have all of these comorbidities and all of these health conditions, and the vaccine should make you feel more confident and more safe, and not be something to fear. Everyone has to make that decision with their doctor. There will be some people for whom the AstraZeneca vaccine isn't appropriate, but I think at least encouraging people to have those conversations rather than just say a blanket no to the vaccine.
That's it for today. Thanks to Melissa Davey for her time. You can read her reporting on the vaccine rollout and reporting from across The Guardian at theguardian.com. We put some links on the full story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Leabeater, Miles Herbert and John Chia. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Muttignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.